Sinner's Prayer. This is Lead Stories. I'm Mutrice Lead, and there's a story behind that selection because I need the Lord to have mercy on me today because I done somebody wrong. Yesterday, actually, I took a shortcut. And I reached back into one of those, you know, the older programs that I, you know, how I plot out the programs on paper and everything. And I lifted one chunk and put it on the new page. And, I succeeded in killing off Randy Weston. Randy Weston is alive and well. And I so thank this very astute crowd for writing me in saying, did he really die? And I said, did I really say that? And I went back and I checked. So have mercy on me, Lord, please. I've done somebody wrong. I already buried the man who is alive and well, and he is a favorite of mine. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you. Especially first under the gate was T. Clem. T. Clem, you were the first, and then about 400 million others followed right after that, saying how wrong I was. It's Wednesday, May the 22nd, and it is open phones today. You dictate where we go. I have a whole bunch of things to talk about, but I'm going to shut up. Only one. Give me one little thing I want to talk about, and that is, you know, in politics, you got to give people credit for nerve. And the person winning the trophy for nerve today is none other than Mr. Weiner, Anthony Weiner. Remember him, the congressman who sent pictures of his Weiner all over Twitter? Well, he's going to probably be the next mayor of the city of New York. Lord have mercy, I tell you. Look, let's get talking about things that matter. 888-874-4888. It's your program today, and you are guiding it with your thoughts about things that need further consideration. And right away, we have the first caller, Sarah from Dallas. How are you?
Greetings to you, Mutrice.
Hello.
Mutrice, you have a magnificent program, so let me compliment you on that, and I wish you would have an extra hour. What do we need to do in order to get you an extra hour?
Oh, wow. We need to just, what do you need to do? Just let me know.
Okay, I will start an online petition and contact Gary and see about maybe he might want to do some rescheduling.
Just let me know. Let me know what you're thinking. And, you know, that's how it starts. Just let me know.
Yes,
I like the idea of we have something, we maximize what we've got. Because, you know, the other thing, too, and I'm not trying to make any kind of an excuse here, but there are so many voices that need to be heard.
Yes, ma'am.
Many of us, you know, we could We would love to have more time, but it kind of blocks other people who never had a shot at saying things and getting their constituencies, talking.
Yes.
So it's a more democratic process that way. At some point, I'm sure we'll be able to change that. But it's great. Thank you. It's a compliment that you say that.
Yes, ma'am.
So what are you throwing out for consideration today?
I'm going to throw two things here. It looks like Chukwuma Lumumba has been elected the mayor of Jackson, Mississippi.
Yes, it looks like so.
Yes, so we are going to hopefully keep an eye on him, because we have all of these black people coming in from the movement with good ideas, and they get into the system, and then they see it is not what it was when they were outside protesting. Once they become the factor that people are now going to have to protest against, and they see the system is bigger and greater than what they thought it was from the outside.
Well, he is a very seasoned guy. That's much I know. He has been in the system in ways that most people are not, and he's had a great familiarity with it because he has been
on the
front line of justice for a long time. And so he's quite familiar with the workings of government, and I wish him the best of luck.
Yes, ma'am. I wish him the best as well, because I know his background from an activist attorney, as well as he participated in the city council in the political arena on the local level. So he has some background coming in there. But we still have to see that once you get in there and you're seeing the people that you're working with and the funding, et cetera, you can see that it could bog you down. But I'm going to digress, because the topic that you were talking on Monday has to do with the president and his speech to Morehouse and what he had to say. And I agree with you, and I agree with the callers. My take with this, Utrice, is this here. I get very fed up when I hear black people sitting around condoning us being talking down too, especially the part of his speech when he started about, okay, we need, In essence, blaming us, saying, okay, that, you know, we were told that we had to do twice as much and all of this stuff. Yes, it's okay to do twice as much if you're going to get twice as much the same pay. But why is it that we are the only people who are told that we have to continue to work as slaves, accept the slave role, and to be still be paid in slave wages? It's as if, though, you tell me, okay, I need to go out here and work for 16 hours and only get my 8-hour pay, when everybody else can go continue to work their 8-hour shift. This talking down and this pandering to his major audience of Europeans, white people, it is very offensive. And people are saying, well, yes, he needs to talk to these men. No, he does not, Utrice. I'm with you. I agree. This is a graduation ceremony. This is Morehouse College. These men made a responsible decision to further their education. They went into debt. Some of them themselves personally, as well as their parents, in order to be where they're at. We are hopeful that when they finish up their studies there, that they are able to get a job to start paying back on those loans and giving back to their communities. So coming into an audience, have these people sitting out in a thunderstorm, pouring down rain, for you to lecture at them, give them a tongue lashing, it was highly inappropriate. And I'm seeing that everyone, this debate has been going back and forth in the blogosphere, of people saying, well, yes, need to talk to... Why he needs to talk to us like that?
The point I was making is that he's really not talking to you.
At you.
He's talking at you.
Exactly.
And he's talking at his community. In fact, I looked at the coverage that the graduation ceremony got, and it all of it follows the same line. The headline, in fact, of the New York Times was that he talks race and responsibility at Morehouse. You know, somewhere along the line, it would occur to the president that it actually betrays a certain psychological deficiency on his part. He's having some trouble dealing with himself.
Yes.
And so he feels a need to do this to demonstrate to his... I want to let you know, he's also offensive to whites when he talks that way. There are many white people who are very offended that this man would use an opportunity where he should be praising these... There are all kinds of speeches. He went to make a campaign speech and, in fact, say, look at me. I am the example of what it is I'm talking about. Look at me. I am a fine husband. He has learned how to be a fine husband, he said, and father and family and you know, all the buzzwords that should be incorporated. These are carefully calculated things that the speech writers go over with him, and he knows now that any exposure in the African American community is to be used to signal to that segment of white America that yearns and loves a black man who talks the way they talk to black people. So, yeah. You know, it's not the whole white community either that's offended.
It's just a segment.
That's right. And that's the segment that he wants to convince, because don't forget, he's a blue dog Democrat. He's a conservative Democrat. So he's saying to people, look at me. I am not the kind of guy that you imagine that just because I'm black, I necessarily like black people. I too, I'm with you.
I'm like one of y'all.
So he betrays at every turn when he has an opportunity to actually be, and it's what was also offensive. Let me just say this. What was also offensive was he never misses the opportunity to put himself on par with Martin Luther King. He has an obsession about it. So, you know, he made reference in two different ways about Martin Luther King. When, you know, people should remember, he's not going to talk about his Nobel Prize, you know, borrowing even the cadence of Martin Luther King at some points in his speech. But in other words, remember that speech where Martin says, remember that I'm a drum major. I was a drum major for justice. He kind of did a really cheap takeoff. Say that it's not about my Nobel Prize. Say that I was a good husband,
a fine husband
and father. Oh, yes, indeedy. They gave him an honorary Doctor of Laws degree. So they
Utrice, which was so sickening to me, and the audience, I guess, some of them get it, because I talked to some of my friends in Atlanta, and they said that afterwards, at a reception afterwards, a lot of the people, a lot of the graduates and their parents, they were highly offended at the speech that was given by him, because he always, when it's time for him, when he's away from black people, he's the president of all people. But now that he's in with this so-called black school, he wants to put on the cadence and, okay, look at me, I'm a brother, I'm like one of y'all, you know, I'm gonna do what only a brother can do. So he comes in there and he panders and he does these disrespectful things, and we all sit up there and say, okay, yes, we need to take it, but it's inappropriate. He's getting ready to go to the Naval Academy.
As it was, here's the good thing. Do not for one second believe that his behavior, his conduct, was not noted. This Morehouse is an old-style black school, and they follow old-style black manners and traditions. And they know when somebody is being rude, they just were being polite. But believe me, he did not make many friends there at all, and made people sit out in the rain.
Yeah, it was
and
pouring.
Stand up in the rain and thunder
it was
and lightning.
And thundering. Yeah, I hear this at you in the States, and you're talking down. And not only that, you're treating not get offline with this last comment. Not only that, as you said, this is Atlanta, and people remember that. But he made it a point of bringing in the gay reference and everything else.
He used the speech. Look, I had a whole thing prepared today, and I said I'm not going to even go there. He used the speech to satisfy every single constituency. I looked at the coverage in the gay press, and they loved the fact that he was so inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
He was inclusive, so he got points there. I looked for coverage, and the Latino press noted that he talked about immigration, because he referred to people, you know how it is to be an outsider. Similarly, Muslims feel this way, so he got those points. And Hispanics feel that way, and gay people feel that way, and it was just so patently offensive.
Exactly.
He did not have anything to say, any encouraging words to say to young men beginning another chapter in their lives. He had nothing in common with them other than, by the way, he actually said, Mo House.
Mm-hmm. Instead of
Mo House.
Yeah, that's what I said. You know, he slipped into this black cadence of trying to say, yeah, I'm a brother. I'm like one of you. And the brother he acknowledged is the one that won the scholarship to Harvard, of course, his alma mater. He, of course, he's going to make sure he gives plugs for that. But this is the kind of condescending, pandering, as you have put it, that he has continuously been doing. And we are not waking up to the fact to see this man, he insults us
but
every time he shows up.
This audience knows the deal. We got it. So calm down, Sarah.
Yes,
have some hot chocolate. I just had some myself.
Yes, you three. But thank you. I get offline for the others to get on.
What good, as they say.
Austin,
from New Jersey. What have you to say, Austin? Where are you taking us?
Hi, you three.
Hello.
Yeah, I just like to say it only counts if he would have said 50 Cent. So he only went part way, okay? So, you know, he had to throw in a couple of qualifiers, but he didn't quite get there. But anyway, not to sound smug, but I never from the beginning drank the Can-Can Kool-Aid. That stayed in the can for me.
Oh, the brother has some problems.
So, anyway, getting on to a serious point. Levity is always a good thing, though, isn't it? I mean, you know, if we just draw on serious points, we'd all go a little nutty. Mm-hmm. But this is a throwback to a topic. This is out of thin air. I've been wanting to vent this one for a while. When I say vent, I mean more like putting it out there, not presenting as vent. Getting back to the Sean Bell shooting in Queens a few years ago. I just make a little abbreviated construct of what that was. A gentleman who was out the night before he was going to get married, I believe, at a bachelor's party celebration in a what is commonly known as a go-go bar or a pared-down sort of a gentleman's club or what have you. And upon leaving there or being there or whatever, sometime there was some altercation and some people were shot, and the people that were shot were men of color, and the people that shot them were police officers, and that's in a nutshell what happened. And then the ramifications of what happened around that developed into something which has been revisited before and since, both of that specific case and cases of things similar to that have happened before and since. Here's a point that I think is important, and it seems very incidental and superficial, but sometimes, as they say, the devil is in the details. People very often would get into the notion that they were undercover cops there and they were drinking, supposedly, along with the patrons there. And there were people who were discussing, you know, how viable or ethical or practical or is it indeed for a cop, an undercover cop, to be drinking in that sort of situation. The point that I wanted to make is that I think in that kind of bar, and I'll raise my hand, you can see it way up high, I've been in that kind of establishment, if you were to order, say, seltzer water or Perrier, if I doubt they'd have that, or whatever, bottled water, you know, there are all kinds of subtle cues that can give off something to somebody not being there or not wanting to be there. I preface by, let me just interject, this is nowhere leading as a way of trying to defend the police. I'm just trying to throw in something which sort of puts a different perspective on this, because I'm not trying to defend them. I'm just saying it's perfectly reasonable that they would have been drinking real honest-to-God alcohol as a way of trying to assume some semblance of blending in and being part of that crowd. Now, the notion that whether they should have been drinking or whether, you know, these undercover drug stings or even whether drugs should even be illegal, which I don't think they should be illegal, those are all separate questions. But what happens in these scenarios is there's a conflation of a whole bunch of different things. and people then use one detail, which may be greatly significant in a certain context, to sort of blurt out what is the primary important thing here. And I think it is possible to see that it is reasonable to assume that drinking in that kind of situation is a practical thing to be doing so as to not blow one's cover. Again, extrapolating from that, whether they should be there, whether they should be in that guise, that's a whole other question. But this is where it becomes tricky, where we see that these things are multi-layered, and we have to be careful about taking out and parsing things in order to try and make a point without taking the fuller context of the specific instance and the broader historical context of these sort of things that have been happening.
It's precisely because of the broader historical context that there is what you may seem to think is a similarity in terms of reaction, because there is an automatic set of things that happens in situations where police officers are implicated in the either very, very lethal force or any kind of force against people of color. Number one, this is a huge point of contention in the communities of color all over the country. And, for example, police officers enjoy a benefit that the average citizen does not. And that is, it amounts to temporary immunity from prosecution. A police officer is not required to answer any questions, not even by the DA, not even by his superior, not even by any police brass. He does not have to answer any questions in a scenario like that for 48 hours mm-hmm. or two working days, mm-hmm. whichever works to his or her advantage. Now, what does that mean? It means they get time to concoct a story. The average citizen does not get temporary immunity from prosecution. If you were implicated in a hit and run and they finally catch up with you, you can say, hey, today is Monday. I'll talk to you around Thursday. It doesn't happen like that. Secondly, there is a pattern, and this is across the country, and there's enough evidence to suggest it, that it is an entrenched pattern, that police officers engaged in these kinds of activities are not engaged in these activities for the first time. There's also another pattern that police officers found to be afoul of the law in roughing up people or even shooting them or killing them in other ways. They tend to be white police officers. They tend to be white police officers on the force between 0 and 5 years. So that's the danger zone. I'd say even 7 years, 5 to 7 years on the police force. Every police force across the country knows this. And yet the training hasn't been effective, because the dynamic remains the same. The vast majority of people dispatched from the earth by police force are African-American and Latino. Mm-hmm. And the vast majority of the police officers implicated in such crimes are white. So this is a problem. And picking apart the small things, whether they were drinking or they're not drinking, actually, on the scale of things, it's not even the major problem here. The major problem is that the minute something like this happens, the victim becomes the criminal, right. And the criminal is the victim. And that is what we have to change. Thanks, Harvey. You got something on the board today. Let's see who reacts to it. Okay? Thanks. Orville, hello. You're on the air.
Hello, Yatrice.
Hi.
The last two times I called in, I felt very discombobulated after.
Did I discombobulate you?
Oh no, not you. The conversation did, and where it went. Oh. I wouldn't even let you discombobulate me.
Good for you.
Yes. What I was really curious about is, it seems, well, it kind of felt like I was walking in a ball for the wrong category. I think I'm getting this confused, this particular segment, with what you used to do or have done on occasion, or maybe only once, where someone presented an idea or a thought, and they reasoned it with someone else. And I'm wondering if you're going to bring that back, because I don't believe I ever took part in that, but I found that very...
Okay, explain. I'm not... You lost me a little bit there.
I lost you, I believe, when I said that you used to have another segment, I believe, where people got together, listeners, and they reasoned.
Oh, you mean people debating each other?
Or reasoned, yes. Well, you can
yes.
debate.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like it. I love the idea.
Because I thought that's what I was going to be getting with you. And
okay.
In fact, I got something totally, totally different.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have two ways of approaching it. When... I discovered when I attempted it earlier on this year, people were a little uncomfortable with it. And it is an idea of getting used to. Believe it or not, people are not used to talking on radio.
Do you think it's anything to do with how it was? Maybe a person would want to talk about something they're interested in, so two people would be on talking about something, or they can then defer and say, okay, I've spoken to you. Maybe next time you will speak to me regarding my issue or thought. Or...
Well, it's a way to do it. What we're doing now is I'm taking a couple of steps back just to get people used to the idea of exchanging ideas. Just get used to the idea of talking, and then we'll get into debating, because that's the point. The big point is debating. But we're doing fine, just getting used to the idea of presenting a thought. And the fact is, we should be prepared at any time, because each of us is an agent of change. Each of us is an influencer of opinion.
Of course.
And so we have to get used to the idea of being spontaneous in our discussion. But I understand it is a little jarring sometimes for people to be placed in a scenario where they are talking to people they don't know. If they're talking to me, by virtue of us being constant with each other, there's a certain amount of ease with it. So people have to be eased into that situation.
And that's what I decided I would do.
We'll kind of pull back a little bit and ease back into the direction of debate.
And I would say to you, please, there are some of your listeners who are very eager and able to do what you say that it seems people are not able or willing to do at this point. So I laud you, as always. and I will depart. Go ahead.
I love the listeners. I just think it's a matter of just getting used to things, and we will have, I predict, we will have the best think tank, on-air think tank right here.
And they all drive SUVs and driving it by themselves, and they're concerned about the environment. Yes, Utrecht. Anyway.
We will all be, this is the program that we launched, the on-air think tank. Mm. Yes, indeedy.
All right. Come on, bye.
Thank you so much. 874-4888. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Let's do a little break to remind you of the other programs that are great right here at PRN, and we'll come back to your thoughts right after that. FM. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrecht Lead, and your calls at 888-874-4888. I just want to remind you that we have a bit of work to do, just a small piece of work, but it is very, very, very important. You did hear the program. We're trying to get children from Haiti reunited with their families here in the United States. Quite a few of you have written in saying that you did make the call. Thank you for that. These are the ways in which we can help It's just a phone call. The idea is to get these children, actually there are so many thousands of them who are suffering, and their relatives on this part of the ocean are suffering as well, because they could take care of these children and relatives, but the United States Division of Homeland Security, Department of Homeland Security, needs to be encouraged to expedite what has already been approved. So kindly make a call to Frederica Wilson, Representative Frederica Wilson's office in Washington, D.C. at 202-225-4506. Very politely ask that she urge President Obama to instruct the DHS to expedite Haitian family reunification now. It's vitally important. People are dying. I'm serious. This is not an exaggeration. And with one phone call, we can make a difference. So make the call, because Representative Wilson is instrumental in all of this, and we will have to recruit her efforts in this. So make a call to her office, 202-225-4506, and ask her, please, to impress upon the Department of Homeland Security the need to expedite Haitian family reunification now. Thanks a lot for that. Andy from Manhattan, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
You know, I've been listening to all this stuff, and what bothers me is, at the present time, I believe there are Senate and House hearings on the Justice Department spying on the AP reporters and the Fox reporter, Mr. Rosen. In my opinion, that's 12 years too late, really. It just must be another Hollywood production. But really what upsets me is the fact that a couple of years ago, when Operation Wall Street was in motion, documents came to light that indicated that the leaders of Operation Wall Street were being targeted for assassination. And the media and everyone just swept that. It just disappeared, you know, and that's really bothers me and, you know, stops me from eating lunch, really. You know, the fact is that they had information about possible assassinations of people who exercised their rights. And yet now there's a big deal about something that's been going on for at least a decade. So I get worried about that in terms of government.
Did you participate in Operation Wall Street?
I know some of the people there. I was there once or twice, really. But like people have said before, the government's watching, you know, and there's no one protecting our rights. So we'll end up in jail and whatnot. It took a lot of bravery. I wasn't all that brave, to be honest, but we were there once in a while.
Well, you know, we have to say, we shouldn't say no one is protecting our rights. There are still very few, way too few, but there are people protecting or trying to. Of course, they're overwhelmed. I just talked to you about, I just made a plug for Haitian kids, and one person is standing in the way. And this is a matter that has been approved, and all it needs is just somebody to say, okay, let's get this thing started. And we still have to beg and prod and poke and implore and scream for people to do the right thing.
Yes, we still have to try to advocate for equal justice under the law decades after it should have been taken care of. It just seems to be sleight of hand. They want to keep us talking about the same things that should have been decided before, abortion rights, education. You know, while they keep depriving the people of these rights, time passes on, the people suffer, and nothing, no progress is made. And this is a deliberate situation to maintain the status quo. Thank you.
Well, wait a minute, Andy. I want to talk with you a little bit, because what I'm trying to say to you is, let's say you have an accurate reading of the situation. That itself is progress. You would be surprised to know, maybe not surprised to know, that so many people are not even where you are in terms of reading the landscape. They don't get it. They don't understand it. There are a lot of people who sat there listening to that speech by Barack Obama who thought it was fantastic. And they were happy to sit in the rain listening to something that had nothing really to do with them. But you know, they don't get it yet. The question I ask is, knowing what you know, let's say, or having a particular view which you think is justified and, you know, you can corroborate it, what do you do with that information? How do you use it in your everyday life?
Well, I don't really believe a lot of this stuff. I'm a critical analyst. I look at the type of information that's coming through, and I analyze it based upon historical precedent stuff. You know, I also try to look at the fact that economics plays a large role in this. But also, in my opinion, there's a point of cultural destruction. It's important for the status quo to destroy the culture of people in the Middle East, of blacks in this country, in order for them to maintain control. If let's say if Iraq, for instance, was able to progress over the last 10 years, they would have had more progress than they have now. So if you destroy the culture, no matter how sorry you are a decade later, you've done unrepairable damage to that culture, to those people. And this is what the modus operandi is. This is, in my opinion, what they do on purpose so that they can, you know, reap the fruits of the raping of the land and the environment. Africa's next. They're going to, you know, they're going to cull the population, in my opinion, through global warming, through these incursions with these terrorists and stuff. This is just the means by which they can keep you stiff-armed. No progress, as long so that if there's no progress, we'll keep progressing. We're getting more money. We're making, you know, we're getting more richer, and our technological civilization, our society is going. But the regular people are not a part of that. Only the special people are part of that. And to me, that's just a matter of control. Just the same way the plantation owners held control over the country during slavery.
How did you arrive at these conclusions?
Hey, you don't have to really be blind, but you have to understand that, in my opinion, once again, the president and his people, they're shysters, they're grifters, you know. Their job is to make George Bush and all that stuff seem better than it really was. You know, they want to be, let me rephrase it, they want to have a worse presidency so that they have the ability to, you know, get him out of the hot box, really.
And I understand what you're saying. I'm asking, how did you arrive at these conclusions? How did you get to where you are in terms of what you're thinking?
Education is a process of teaching yourself. I self-educated myself. I went to college, but I continued educating myself. I continued reading, you know, and history is a good factor also. Without knowing your past, you can't control, you can't understand your present, you know. So at my age, it was also from experience. So I didn't close my eyes. I don't believe the lies. I look at the actual things that have happened, the actual actions, you know. If you look at the actions, no matter what you say, no matter what they say, if you look at the actions of what are going on, then you realize the true motive behind the actions.
Well, guess what you just did? What you just did was explain to everybody listening how independently to come to one's own conclusions. It's really not important whether people agree or disagree with you. It is important that you put yourself on a journey of self-education. And I would say that, I mean, you have come to several points of clarity about things. And that was what I was interested in. Without you knowing it, you actually explained how important it is for people to not just, you know, take what other people say, but to embark on an independent path of inquiry into the things that they're seeing in order to understand them better.
I agree. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Andy, for your call. 888-874-4888. We still have some time to take a couple more calls. I just want to remind you, Friday is part two of the presentation with Gerald Horn. Dr. Gerald Horn will be here for part two. So those of you, and I got a lot of reaction, very positive reaction, and certainly I enjoyed it too. I haven't gotten into the habit yet of administering pop quizzes, which is what I used to do. One thing at a time, we'll get there. 888-874-4888. Well, let's see what else I have so many things. I don't want to talk about my topics. I want to talk about your topics. So my topics are going to be shelved for the moment. I do have some feedback on my email. I have some, Thomas Smith says, that part in the speech about forget about my Nobel Prize. I'm a good husband. Did that remind you of Ann Romney's speech before the Republican convention? Vote for my husband. He's a wonderful guy. Besides racism, he says, the bourgeoisie have nothing to promote their politicians with but good marital relations. Sean Johnson just asks a very simple question. Does Obama talk down to blacks and talk up to whites? You know, everybody is beginning to see this charade for what it is. And it's so sad because by now, 5 years into his term of office, we should be able to be proud of this man. For so many things that he said he stood for and by now should have accomplished, because he certainly has had the help from the grassroots. And the aim is to continue to use it. There's a great number of plans in the works to harvest the potentials on a permanent basis, it seems. You know, the folks who were drawn into his campaign by the great efficient machine, they have plans for that. They've formed an entire industry on the basis of that machine, and they intend to go back to it time and time and time again to basically accomplish their own aims and objectives. They've already made an industry of it. And they will tell you, oh, we need your help. No, you don't. You don't. You got all the help you need. And we need your help. Now, we need the help to see where it is you're going. So, oh, my gosh. You see a wonderful thing being squandered, and it is very disheartening because it could be so different. And again, it's not that people were expecting grand miracles, you know. People are not that crazy. They understand the limitations and they understand the obstacles, and they are formidable because the opposition is well financed, it's well organized, and it has the advantage of being in office. It knows the ropes. So we were backing the underdog. And the treatment so far is not so, it doesn't leave a pleasant scent in the air. It's not a good thing. And what's worse is that it doesn't seem to bother the president. It just doesn't seem to bother him at all. He has not, for example, increased his visitation with the Black and Latino caucus in Congress. Even the Progressive Caucus, he's not talking to people. He's in his own bunker, and in his head, he is absolutely right. Whatever he's doing is absolutely right. We'll be talking before too long about a major, major, major thing that this president has done that kind of slipped by without anybody noticing. In the middle of all of these scandals unfolding, our attention has been diverted from it, but it is quite serious, and we will get to it. Believe it or not, we will. So we have a handle on him now, and we're not disillusioned anymore about this business of what he can deliver or the distance between what he says he wants to deliver and the actuality of it. But we're getting close to the end of our program today, and I do want to thank you so very much for the quality of your input and the sincerity of your input and the brilliance of your input, because this is what we ought to do. We ought to be talking to each other. The number one advantage that the opposition has is that they talk a lot to each other, and we don't. We don't talk enough to each other. We don't exchange points of view and experiences and expertise. We don't have that exchange going as normal routine. We have to break that pattern, because I firmly believe each of us has a certain level of wisdom. Each of us has a way of sharing the best of ourselves with each other. And I think that is what gets us to progress as a whole, as a group. And we are brave enough to confront these incongruities, and not in a way that offends people, but we're stating the realities. This is, you know, a conversation for grown-ups. We did not make the world the way it is. We have to confront the inconsistencies head on. And it requires a certain amount of integrity, and that comes through when you present a point of view. Even if you disagree, there's a sense of integrity to what you say, so therefore it must be respected, and that's the way we conduct ourselves on Lead Stories. So thank you so much. I just want to say one last, Lord, please forgive me for Randy Weston as we sign off today. Thank you for the pleasure and privilege of your company.